tree. Making daisy chains and
watching. Hello, Paula. My favourite bee lady in the whole world. Hello, how are you?
I'm very well. Hello, my lovely Queen Esther.
I suppose some people might have heard you on the podcast already, but could you tell us a little bit about yourself? You're the true queen bee.
Oh, but there's room for plenty of queen bees.
There are.
So I'm Paula Carnell. I'm a bee consultant and a honey sommelier. So I help various companies and landowners who want to have bees, or they want to save the bees, but they're not quite sure of what that means. Mm-hmm. And so I help people, if they want to keep bees, to do it sustainably. I do bee audits of all the other different species of bees. So it's really looking at where your environment is and how best to support bees in a sustainable way. That's my work. That's what I do.
Oh, it just sounds lovely. I always dream of being your assistant, but now you've got your new assistant called B. I don't think I stand a chance. Oh, well, never mind.
You could be my little London wing.
Oh, that would be good. There's so many things to ask you about today. But first of all, I was going to just ask you, how are your bees?
Well, they're okay. I mean, I've got my own bees and then there's bees that I look after for some of my clients. So, and yes, we're going into winter nice and strong. I actually saw a drone on, I've got one little hive just behind my office here. So it's a sneaky hidden hive. And there was a drone sat outside, and that was only last week, whereas all my other hives, I have not seen drones since end of August. Yeah. So I was really shocked. I'm like, what's going on? But of course, it's too cold and wet and miserable to open up the hive. Mm. So whether he was just a little straggler that didn't get cold, or whether the weather is confusing them and he sort of emerged, you know, they've got another batch of drones. Who knows?
Well, I've had the same thing with my hive. You know, I noticed, but it was about a couple of weeks ago, I noticed one or two drones. And then the next day I thought, oh, I'm going to watch this. And I noticed loads of drones. You know, and I watched for a couple of days, and yes, it was drone action, and it wasn't chucking out drones. They looked like really happy and busy in the area. So I think with this strange weather, yeah, there's loads of drones. I was thinking when it was really warm, I thought, crikes, are we going to get a swarm at this time of year?
Oh, I know. I was thinking the same. It is odd. But the good thing is nature always has a balance. So even though it's warmer and we're worrying now because the bees are going to eat more honey and, you know, what's going to happen, but there's still flowers out. So when they are flying around, at least there's things to forage on. I've got a whole load of borage that I was really late in sowing and calendula, and they've all come up in my little garden here. So I'm not too worried because I think, what the worst case is when it's wet and cold and damp and there's nothing to feed on. And I think that's the worst thing for bees. If it's really cold and they all go to sleep, then that's fine. They don't eat much. And if it's mild and sunny and things are still flowering, then, you know, I think they'll be okay then. So,
And I think they made loads of honey this year. And I think they've made loads of honey this autumn so far.
Yes.
I haven't looked in, but in my lid, I've got this sort of lid that it's like a shallow box, but it's just full of wax and bees, and they've got two supers and they've gone up into this box.
Oh, wow. So that's all wild comb.
Yeah, in the top.
Oh, brilliant.
So there's a lot going on, a lot of mess for me to clear up in the spring. There seems to be like, it's what sort of noise is it? Can you hear a funny noise, Paula, or not?
It could be the rain, because I've got a tin roof.
Oh, okay then. Okay, yeah. Well, that's it. It seems to have stopped now.
Yeah, it has sun's come out.
So So you've set up your little office and I can see you there and you look so nice and cozy in it.
My tin roof and my bookshelf, which I've had to take some of the books away because I'm studying module 2 at the moment of the BBKA exams, all about Ooh. Honey and products from the hive. So I've now got books all over the place while I'm doing little snippets of revision.
Oh, I bet you know all the answers already.
Well, no. There's always more to learn. No, there's always more to learn.
What have you learnt when you've been studying the last couple of weeks? What have you learnt that you really like, you can't believe you didn't know, or you're just so interested in?
Well, it's the details. And because it's the BBKA, it's more mm-hmm. about showing honey and it's about exhibiting your wax and products from the hive. So we're having little study groups every Monday evening.
Oh.
And it's brilliant. It's brilliant because they'll ask a question. So we've been going through past exam papers all together. And because I haven't been that organised and a lot of my books are here, and so when we have the study nights, I haven't got reference things here, and there's these sort of guided references that you can go through. So when you're doing exams, this is what's so interesting, is it's quite different to learning when you're really interested in something. So you have mm-hmm. to learn what you need to know to pass the exam. And they're looking for specific answers. So when they were asking questions about honey and I would just be rattling off, and it might be a 5-point question and I'll be going, oh, yes, and you could do this, you could do that, da, 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 da. And then there's this silence. And then someone will come out with the 5 points that will actually get you the points in the exam. It's not about the tasting of the honey. It's about making sure the honey looks good and is a high quality product. So it's really good because I've learned more about the science of crystallization. And there's all the lots and lots of long words that I didn't know before. I know.
I hate long words. I can never remember them.
And it's funny because when they come around and ask me a question and it'll be something that I do know, you know, it's things like, what are the properties of wax? And it's like, oh, okay. And yeah. So it's
what are the properties of wax?
Oh, don't ask me. You've put me on the spot. Well,
you've got to pass this exam.
I know. Well, I've got a few more days. It's not till Saturday. But, you know, I would think, oh, well, wax is made from honey and da, 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 da. Mm-hmm. But they're looking at, oh, no, it's the smell. It's the aroma. And when they show wax, the examiner will actually have a torch because they'll shine a light through the wax to make sure that there's no impurities or cracks or, you know, or anything in there. And I mean, when I melt down my wax, I literally just melt it down. Oh, I've learned an excellent tip from one of the other people, a lady called Anne Pike.
What, for melting wax?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, go on then. What's the tip?
Well, you know, when you melt your wax and you'll have it in a bain-marie and then you sort of melt it all down and then it solidifies and you get a layer of crud, don't you?
Yeah.
And then you think, oh, you know, and you've got to pick it all off and then you can sort of, you can pour it through a sieve and you still get this crud. Well, what Anne Pike does is she wraps her wax in a muslin bag, puts that in the wax melter. So then all the wax comes through the muslin and the crud stays in the muslin bag.
That's a good one.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm learning lots.
So when people who don't know what the crud is, could you explain what the crud actually is in wax? What is that crud?
Well, it's bee's knees. So when you have the wax comb in a hive, the bees will be storing it for honey. So you'll have the honey, but you might also have some bits of pollen. So the best, cleanest wax is super wax. And super wax comes from the super frames. And it was so funny because a couple of years ago, I was trying to get my certification for my lip balm recipe. And I was talking to, I think it might have been Dr. Sarah Robb, actually. She's the expert on, you know, getting your CSPRs for your skincare products, and she had said something about, oh, you need to make sure you've got super wax. And we were like, oh, where do you get super wax? But of course, it's from the supers. So we were thinking there was this sort of super wax supplier somewhere, but no, it's just from the supers. Oh, can you hear the rain?
Oh, I can, on that tin roof.
Yes, wonderful tin roof.
It sounds very nice.
It does. It does.
So, when you get your honey.
Yeah. You use a warm knife and you cut off the cappings, which is all the little wax lids that the bees have put on each cell of honey. And you put that on a strainer and you spin your frames of honey and then you have this super wax. Well, what I normally do is put that in a Tupperware pot and put it in the roof space of my hives and the bees will clean it off. So then you get, if you're quick, if you time it just right, you get a tray of lovely, like, powdered wax. If you leave it too long, the bees have made amazing tunnels and caves and then started storing honey in it again.
Yeah.
And then you've had it. But yeah, they clean up the wax and then you can melt it and then you don't get too much crud. But the crud is where the bees have lined some of the wax cells with propolis, but also you might get bits of bees' knees, bits of bees' bodies. Yeah, it's crazy stuff, isn't it? It's amazing. Yeah. You think you've got a clean wax and then there'll still be bits of crud in it.
I didn't know that they lined the cell with propolis.
Yes, before the queen lays an egg, they will actually line it with propolis.
That's amazing, isn't it? So they have to make a lot of propolis.
They do. And so they need the plants to be secreting the propolis. You know, they need to get that resin. But also, bees have been bred to not produce propolis because it sticks the hive together and makes it really tricky for beekeepers. So it's an interesting thing. And what I've noticed is, particularly at the Newt in Somerset, where I've been managing the bees there for about 5.5 years now, we've noticed that the bees, because we haven't brought in any queens, and they're sort of getting more and more native, these bees, they're producing more and more propolis. And we stopped harvesting honey after midsummer. And so now we notice that the bees have so much propolis around the hive. And one of the colonies in the Byzantium, they're in a golden hive. And you know, you get the little sliding trays underneath a hive that you can pull out so you can look at any debris. It's normally under a mesh floor, but this hive has got a solid floor. But you can still pull out the tray, except we can't pull out the tray now because the bees have put such a thick wadge of propolis, so you just can't move it. But it's an amazing example of propolis.
Oh, my God. I mean, the more you sort of, I don't know about you, but the more you like understand bees, and of course we love their honey, but, you know, it really is great to get a blob of propolis, isn't it? And just to pinch that and, oh, it's so nice, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And that smell, when you lift the lid of a hive and you breathe it in and it's like, oh, and I miss that in the winter months. I just, you know, I have a grief for not being able to have that smell of the hive.
So do you make anything out of propolis?
Yes, I do a throat spray and tincture.
Oh, and is that because I made some with vodka and a ball of propolis, and it did seem to work.
Oh, it's amazing stuff. Yes, it takes a long time to get the resin out of the propolis, so you need a strong alcohol. But yes, it's good stuff. Good stuff.
It really is.
Yeah, and we just have a spray in our throat every day, you know, so whenever you feel that bit of a tickle, you just know that the propolis is going to kill it because it's antibacterial, antiviral, antiseptic, antibiotic. It's a wonder. It's a super propolis.
It's a super propolis. It's super. It really is super, Paula.
super.
So what other products have you got for sale in your hive then?
Well, I've got some honey. So my hive is it's mainly my office and workshop, but we have a little, we have quite a nice shop window. So we have all sorts of honey. So where I'm ordering honeys from different beekeepers and for different clients, then I have a display. And I also have honey from local beekeepers. But I have to tell you this is a funny story. So I think it's funny. My goal is to help beekeepers sell their honey for its true value. So to increase the price so that beekeepers can earn a living selling their honey. Because the problem is most beekeepers are feeling they are forced to compete with the big boys or the supermarkets for their honeys. And of course, honey is the second most adulterated food. So a lot of honey that is available for sale isn't even honey. And it's certainly not as high quality as like your honey would be.
Yeah.
So my mentor, Chris, who taught me beekeeping, he's got about 150 hives. So he sells his honey locally and he has loads of it this time of year. And then when you get to April, May, there's none of it around and everyone's like desperate for honey, which is why I have honey from around the world so that I can have good honey all year round. Mm. Anyway, I saw him the other day and I said, look, Chris, I really want to have some of your honey. So I've got some of his honey now in my shop. Now, obviously, I need to earn a little bit when I sell it. Mm-hmm. So he sells it to me. So this is complete transparency. He sells it to me for £6 a jar trade. Yeah. And yeah. I sell it for £8.50 a jar. And of course, yeah. I'll wrap it in tissue and put it in a bag. And,
of course. Yeah, that sounds a good, very good deal. Yeah.
Well, it does. But do you know what? I could buy his honey from the local greengrocer for £5.65 because he likes to know that local people can have local honey at an affordable price. So I said, okay, well, that's good. But I just want people to know, as long as people know that I'm paying you more, I don't want them to look at his honey at £5.65 in the greengrocer's and then his honey in my shop for £8.50 and think that I'm ripping them off. I'm paying the beekeeper twice as much as he would get if he sells to the greengrocer. So,
oh my God, that's a bit weird. What? So, are you selling his honey then? Is it going off the shelf?
No, it's not going off the shelf because everyone knows they can buy it down the road cheaper. But maybe I will still have his honey in April when nobody else has. So we'll see.
Yeah. It is. It's funny, isn't it? But it's interesting that he's doing it like that. But I suppose it's like a tradition, really, isn't it? I think with beekeepers and even me, you know, on my allotment, I sell a few jars and I've sold it. I mean, I've sold made the jars littler this year and I've sold them at £5 a jar. But I know that I could probably get more for it. But also you sort of feel when it's your community as well, you do want to share the love. But anyway, I've got one or two jars left, but not many. Yeah. But like I've got, like you, I've got all my lovely honeys that you've sent me and I've got some honeys from around the world and the special, unusual honeys that are just so exciting to show to people. So it is nice to have them, like you say, for when you run out of your own honey, isn't it? And
oh, it is. You know,
yeah. And then you're helping other beekeepers by buying that honey too. So it's all good, isn't it?
Well, it is. And I find so many similarities with the art world that, of course, I used to be involved with. And I think it's the same in that when you're doing something that you love, you don't feel of it as work. And it's very hard then to take money for it because you just want to give it away. You know, you paint a picture and if somebody loves it, you want them to have it. And the same with the honey. You just feel, well, all I've done is taken it from the bees. But, you know, if you want to be living your passion and you know, doing it as a job, you've got to monetize it on some level, haven't you?
Well, it's true. Tom's quite good at telling me, oh, you know, blood minute, don't give it all away, you know, because once I gave it to the chimney sweep and there's two builders round the corner and I told them I was a beekeeper and I said, oh, I'll bring you a jar, you know, and I told Tom and he was like, for God's sake, don't be bringing them a jar, you know, but I can't stop myself. I'm just terrible.
I know.
But never mind.
Have you got the bees whispering in your ears? Are they going, well, Esther, this one's for Jane and then this one is for the chimney sweep?
Maybe. Well, talking about whispering in the ears, actually, one stung Lenny in the ear the other day, because he keeps going up to the hive and he is a bit silly, you know, and he did get stung on the ear. So he's been stung on the foot now and the ear, but it doesn't seem to be putting him off going to find out what's going on at the hive.
What sort of dog is he? I'm not a doggy person, so I don't.
Yeah, he's a lurcher. He's a, you know, tall, skinny dog that likes to chase things. So probably he's enjoying chasing the bees.
Oh, gosh.
But enough of him because he's getting on my nerves. What about, I know today you wanted to talk about the black bees and, you know, it would be really interesting for everybody to find out how's it going down there with black bees.
Well, yeah, it's a really interesting subject because generally people think they know that the bees are endangered and they're like, oh, okay, I really want to save the bees. I'm going to get a beehive. But actually getting a beehive isn't necessarily going to save the bees and it depends how you do it. And conventionally, what you're taught to do is you go, yep, you're going to get a beehive. So you buy your hive and then you order your packet of bees. Now, if you're going to do it sustainably, you get bees from a local beekeeper.
Yeah.
But quite often they're not. They're brought in. Thousands and thousands of bees are imported into Britain every year for beekeepers. And they're not adapted to our environment. You know, they're bred to produce honey. So you'll have a queen who's laying eggs every day through the summer, whether it's raining or snowing or whatever the weather. She'll just be laying eggs. So you get these huge colonies. And if you have a huge colony, they need a lot of food. And so if you haven't got all the flowers around, then beekeepers are having to feed them sugar. And now there's more and more evidence about the damage that sugar does to the bee guts. So just like us, we need that gut biome. We need that healthy flora to keep us, you know, have a strong immune system. And honeybees are the same. And if they're fed sugar, I mean, a lot of bees are fed just sugar from August through to April. I mean, how would you be if you just had a diet of white sugar?
Oh,
all through
God.
The winter. Oh, it doesn't bear thinking about.
Well, I mean, I used to do that when I first started beekeeping. I took all my honey and, you know, fed them sugar. And I did think it was a bit wrong. And obviously, I didn't really understand it. But, you know, sometimes.
But then that's what everybody does, you know. And you just don't realise. But I feel now it's a bit of a dirty secret in the beekeeping world, because when you say it out loud to people who are buying your honey, they're so shocked. But then also people don't realise that bees eat honey. They're thinking that we take the honey because the bees don't need it. But they do need it.
So of this course is where they do.
Yeah. But this is where the black bee comes in, because the black bee, so Apis mellifera mellifera, is the native northern European honeybee. And it's slightly hairier because it needs to be warmer, because it's a bit chilly up here. And they have adapted to our climate and our environment. So a black bee queen will lay eggs according to temperature, not daylight. So what that means is through...
Ooh, I think you've got a drone flying over there.
Yeah, it's a drone. Big fat drone.
I know you said you got a drone and it's flying over now.
It is. It's a big drone. It's a bit of a scary one. I'm not going to open the door now. Go away, go away. Gosh. Yes, I wouldn't want to be a queen bee with him coming.
Oh, no.
I think that might have to be edited out.
No, not at all. That'll be edited in.
So a native black bee, she will be thinking about laying eggs after midwinter. So she has to be thinking, you know, it takes 21 days before a female bee emerges, and she's going to need bees to get the first spring pollen and spring nectar. So when the snowdrops arrive, so she's going to start laying eggs and building up the hive. But she'll be building and building, and then April, May comes and it's all lovely and there's lots of flowers around and, you know, the hive's growing and she's laying like 1,000 eggs a day. So that's all good. And then what often happens in Britain, you'll get June or July and it can suddenly get really cold and it could be wet and windy. Well, the Italian queen is just waking up going, oh, it's still daylight, still summer. I'm still going to keep on laying the eggs. Whereas a black queen...
With an Italian accent. Oh, no.
Oh, yes, which I can't do. Oh, mamma mia. But so a black queen will be thinking, oh, it's a bit chilly out there. I don't want to have lots more babies to feed, so I'll just hold off a bit. So she'll go a bit quieter. So she's more adapted to this environment. And so they don't need to be fed as much as much honey or sugar. And last night on our study group, there's a lovely chap who is very, very wise. He's a master beekeeper and he's an examiner. So he's been helping us with our studies and telling us all the big long words that we need to remember. And he was saying about, you look in the old bee books, sort of 60 years ago, 100 years ago, and you've got people handling bees wearing skirts, no gloves, no veils, because they had the native black bee, which was very gentle. It was a really kind, gentle, loving bee that loved being looked after in people's gardens and would produce just enough honey to keep us all happy. And honey was highly valued. And that's what we had. But now, with all the imports, we've got these passionate Italians and we've got the, you know, the Eastern European bees that are all like, let's make honey, let's go and collect all this nectar. And And they're a bit disappointed they come here and you've got these sort of relaxed, chilled out native bees that are just thinking, well, it might be raining today. I think we need to stay indoors, or, you know, it's a bit chilly. Let's snuggle down. So I think,
cute. But why did they? So what happened? Did they just get sort of bred out of, bred out of the country because of all the imported bees?
Well, there's two strains of thought. There's one is that disease came in, so about 100 years ago, and again with the Varroa. And because humans have been managing bees, there was an understanding that only managed bees could survive. And because we lost so many bees with disease through various things, so there was the Isle of Wight disease in about 1900, and then there was the Varroa. There is a belief that any wild bees couldn't possibly have survived or adapted without human interference. So there was a belief that the black bee completely died out, couldn't possibly exist. But what's happening is you have some people who have been breeding the black bee. So there's like a black bee corridor coming up from Cornwall. And because there was areas where the black bee couldn't mate with other species, you know, with other subspecies of bees, that you could keep this pure strain. And about 8 or 9 years ago, I was asked if I'd want to be part of that corridor bringing it into Somerset, and I was really interested in this until they said you've got to kill the queens you've got, and it really is selective breeding, and I really didn't want to do that. And there's also this risk that if you have a black queen and if you mate, or if you have black drones and they mate with an Italian queen, that first generation can be really feisty, really aggressive.
I think I've had them, yeah.
Yeah, and so that needs to be bred out of them. So that puts people off the breeding of them, but it also has created a lot of fear about the black bee because people are thinking, oh, no, I know those black bees, they're really aggressive. But you've got pockets. So Wales, there's a big population of black bees. Ireland, there's a big population. And the wonderful Philippe, who's at Blenheim Palace, he had his bees sort of genome sequenced, and they found that he had lots of black bees living in the wild in trees at Blenheim Palace.
I heard about that, so interesting. Yeah, it is.
And so, but also Professor Tom Seeley, who was studying bees in Ithaca in New York State, and he'd been studying them since the 1970s. And so he'd been collecting samples of bees for all that time, you know, 50 years, and they've now been able to DNA sequence them. And they found that when Varroa came, a lot of the bees died out. So there was something like 26 different family strains. And then with Varroa, it went down to about six. So five or six evolved and developed. And so now the whole, all the colonies in that forest all come down to five or six surviving strains of bees. And this is what happens, is the bee evolves and it survives. So, but now more and more people are talking about it. It's really heavy rain.
I know. I hope the bees have got their umbrellas at yours, because they really do need them, don't they? Those black bees will be sitting on the doorstep going, oh, we don't want to go out. Get your umbrella, girls, because it's, don't come out. Just stay back, because it's very rainy.
I think it's story time, isn't it? They all snuggle in and they tell stories of when it was nice and sunny.
Yeah. Do you remember when it was nice and sunny? Well, that will come back. It will, girls. It will.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, isn't it? So what do you think, you know, obviously for sustainable beekeeping, then we should be going for the black bees, shouldn't we, really, if we want to?
Well, we should. I think, but it is, there was Professor Grace McCormack, she did a talk at the Honey Show, and she's doing all the studies on the black bees in Ireland and also with Blenheim. And I think she's working with Willie Robson, who's Chainbridge Honey in Northumberland. And he was a great character. His father started the beekeeping company, their honey business, 75 years ago. And Willie's been keeping bees 60 years.
Wow.
I know. So he did a great interview, and he was talking about his bees. And Grace McCormack was talking about the bees. And how there's different pockets where people are using native bees and they're sharing them. But there is a fear that because so many people are reliant on bringing in queens, that we don't have enough native stock. There isn't anybody really rearing queens to the scale that we need for all the beginner beekeepers and everyone who wants to keep bees. So it's interesting because I'm also working with commercial honey producers, and it's interesting looking at the numbers. You know, I love business and I'm fascinated with business and I want everyone to be successful. So it's thinking, well, how much are you spending at the moment on buying queens? How much would it cost you if you reared your own queens? But also, why are the queens dying? Why do so many queens need replacing? And could it be down to nutrition? So if the bees were fed more honey and less sugar, would less queens be dying in the spring and need replacing? So it's looking at it more holistically and, of course, more naturally, because I like all the natural stuff. So this is why it's great when we hear from the great wise beekeepers like Willie Robson, who is rearing his own queens. He's got 1,500 colonies in a pretty tough region, you know, in the borders of England and Scotland. And he runs a family business. He employs, I can't remember how many people, but he does employ quite a few people selling honey. So he's a real success story. And when
that's
people
amazing.
Are saying, I know, but you see, to have
good
healthy
old Willie.
Bees, I know, lovely Willie. I was just so excited to have his talk, because you think, you know, an old boy, what's he going to be? You know, he's obviously going to have a lot of wisdom and experience, but I don't think anyone really realized how revolutionary his beekeeping is. He's gone back to basics. He says he's got to have local bees who can survive out on the heather moors. Because if you have fancy pantsy Italians, they're going to go, oh, it's a bit chilly here, you know. Whereas a good rugged, hairy black bee is like, come on, girls, the heather's out. Let's go and collect the nectar. So it was really interesting. So he allows swarming. He allows wild mating.
Wow.
He says if you look after the bees, they won't swarm. You know, they'll decide it's better off staying put rather than fleeing.
Gosh, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. And he really promotes the hygienic behaviour, so the grooming rather than relying on chemicals. He said, if I have bees that have to be dependent on him pandering to them, they're not going to be strong enough. So he's really reared 1,500 incredibly strong British bees that are producing enough honey to run a successful business and keep lots of families, you know, with roofs over their heads. And that's the kind of success we want to see in beekeeping. It's natural, it's sustainable, and producing amazing honey. So,
God, it's a great story. It's just so interesting, isn't it, how I think people also want to buy stuff in, don't they? They want to buy stuff in. They want, oh, a nice Slovenian queen. Oh, she's going to be good. And, you know, you can go on websites and you can look at the different temperaments of what they're like and you can choose your own queen. And that's sort of the world that we're living in. But, yeah, it's if we can be more like Willie, it'll be good, won't it?
It would. And it would be cheaper. But I think as humans and modern society, everybody wants a quick fix. They want the best bee. They want the best plants to feed the bees. But actually, we need biodiversity. We need everything. And the honeybees are not the main pollinators. They're the honey makers.
Of course.
So every time we buy in bees, we're upsetting the natural population of the other bees. So that's why did I send you one of these?
My ID card. Great. Oh, that looks good.
So this, what I want, when I do my bee safaris, I take people on walks and I point out the different bee species and how we need, you know, the 275 species that we have in Britain. And again, a lot of people come on a bee safari and they're thinking, oh, yeah, I really want to save the bees. I'm thinking about getting a hive. And I'm like, no, just have a look at what bees you've got already. And what is lovely is when I hear about people who said, oh, they got the local beekeeper in because they're thinking about having bees. And the beekeeper looked in their garden. He said, no, you've got too many other bees. Don't bring in honeybees because you'll wipe out all your lovely pollinators. And so it's, you know, the wise beekeepers who are in balance with nature, they can see that. But if you do want to have bees, you just need to get a hive and a swarm will move in, you know, if you place the hive in the right place. And then you're not upsetting the balance. But it might take a year, it might take 2 years. And as you said, everybody's like, you know, you've got a shopping list and it's like, okay, I'll tick the box. And we need to slow down and actually address our whole perspectives of death, you know, because at the bottom line, it all comes down to, oh, I don't want my bees to die.
Yeah.
But actually dying is part of the natural circle of life. So is it being selfish, keeping our bees alive, using chemical treatments, feeding them sugar, when all we're doing is prolonging the inevitable that they are going to die? And, oh, the best quote was from Willie Robson. And he said, never have a dispute with a bee because they have a corporate memory. And I thought, what does he mean by a corporate memory?
Help!
I know. But he said, with the evolution of bees, if a single bee leaves a hive and it learns something, like it learns where there's a good nectar source or a good pollen source, it comes back to the hive and shares that wisdom. Now, bees only live 6 weeks, so it's no good if that bit of wisdom dies with the bee. It has to live on. And this is what a corporate memory is, like a business. A business, if it learns something, it has to embody that new learning. It can't keep relearning it every year because it will keep making the same mistakes and then fail. So that corporate memory is an imprint of the wisdom that carries on. So if you really upset your bees, they've gone back to the hive and they've said, crikey, here comes trouble. And the children's children, you know, the great granddaughters of that colony of bees will remember that when somebody comes with a white suit puffing the smoke, you know, there's trouble. So,
God, that's terrible, isn't it? Because you think, you know, I mean, I had a bad experience not so long ago and they all stung me in my desert boots because I got the wrong shoes on. You know, I think, oh, they only remember for 2 weeks and then you can go back. But what you're saying is that if they see me next time I go up, especially if they see me in my desert boots, they might come to get me.
Yeah, they've got they do a little desert boot dance inside the hive. You know, they go, beware of the desert boots, you know. But yeah, I mean, so Willie says, you know, if he has a hive that for some reason have been upset, they've got to rewrite that memory. He's got to give them good things to think about.
He's got to wear an orange suit when he goes to the hive instead of a white one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, I'm sorry about your desert boots. I had desert boots this year because I couldn't cope with sweaty welly boots. But they didn't like your desert
boots. Don't wear them when you're beekeeping.
Oh, did you have them with a skirt?
I had them with my bee suit, but I looked at one of my colonies and I'd realised I hadn't taken the queen excluder off. And I thought, oh, flipping it. But, you know, it was all stuck down now because it's been on since the spring, you know. And so I had to take the super off, which was so heavy and really full of honey, and then take it was a metal one and it was so full of propolis. Anyway, they did not like it and they fell in my shoes and that was it.
Oh, no.
And I had to finish the job. Anyway, I went back. Tom was on the allotment and I got his boots on and went back and I was fine. But, dear, it was
bad.
So
your feet all swole up?
Yes.
Oh, no. And what do you do for stings? What do you do when you have a nasty stinging episode?
I just put a bit of honey on, but I haven't had a stinging episode for a long time. I've been really lucky, actually. I've had the odd one on my hand, you know, but not very often. But yeah, this was a proper full-on one.
Have you had a look at the meridian and thought about what special healing the bees were giving you around your feet?
Oh, no. Should I?
Well, you could do. Yeah. I like to think that the bees, they sting you because they want to heal you. And I had, about 6 years ago, I had a big stinging episode all around my ankles and the backs of my calves. And when I looked it up with meridians and emotions and, you know, what healing I might need, it was all to do with standing up for what you believe in and speaking up and having that confidence. So is there something that you're lacking confidence in?
Yeah, that's good. Your
feet are your sort of, your knees are your pivots, but your feet are your support. So are you questioning your foundations?
Oh, yeah. What about when they stung me on the vagina then? What's that for?
Well, I don't know if I could say that on a podcast, but
Thank you so much for coming on, and it's so lovely.
Thank you so much for asking me. It's always a delight to chat with you, Esther.
One day I'm definitely going to come along to see you.
I know.
And I'm going to buy all the honeys in the shop and bring them home. Until then, my dear Queen Bee, Paula Carnell.
Lots of big hugs and lots of love.
Lots of bee hugs to you too, and lots of love.
Aww.
Bye. Queen Bees is written and created by Esther Coles and Jane Horrocks. It is produced by Claire Broughton and Andy Goddard and partly recorded at the Hives on my allotment near Crouch End in London. Our title music is Sweet Nothing by Amy Mae Ellis and Will Cookson. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Queen Bees Pod for pictures and videos from the Hive. Queen Bees is a Hat Trick podcast.